It's the real talk of Texas with the authentic accent thrown in free. It's Robert Pratt with Pratt on Texas.
Senator Robert Duncan joins us now over the battle on Texas groundwater rights. His take, Senator Duncan, about 2 weeks ago or a little more, there were a couple of feature articles about the groundwater bill. One good one in the Lubbock Avalanche Journal, but not as much of a political take, one in the Austin American Statesman, if memory serves, about the debate that turned fairly heated between you and Senator Frazier on Frazier's bill regarding the vested interests of a landowner in his groundwater. I didn't do anything but read the highlights of that bill. And then on that weekend, I happened to be present with a lot of people involved in agriculture at two different events. And I was just getting beaten up by everybody, all mad at you, quite frankly. So we had some people to come on and explain it that week. And then this weekend, I've had more folks, and that earlier show's podcast at proudontexas.com. This weekend, I got the same thing from people who attended a big groundwater meeting in Hale County. And glad you're willing to spend this half hour with us and just lay it out and tell us what your side of it is. And I'll podcast that as well, so people probably sure. By tomorrow morning can go to proudontexas.com and listen to that as well. Senator, welcome, and go right ahead. Just lay it out for us.
Well, thanks, Robert. Groundwater, is, and at least the ownership of groundwater, has always been a question in Texas. There's a lot of people that think that the courts have really settled it, but they really haven't. I've spoken at many occasions over the last many years working with groundwater districts and producers up in our part of the world, especially trying to get a handle on how long we're going to have irrigated agriculture out here. And the question is what do you own? I don't think there's any question that you own the water under the ground. The question is since it moves back and forth and your neighbor can pump it out from underneath you, your ground, or drain it from your ground or whatever, what is the nature of the ownership interest and how do we enforce that interest? The best way to do that is through, like we do in oil and gas, with like the Railroad Commission does, and that's what we have decided to do in Texas with the local groundwater conservation districts. The question is, and it really gets down to a legal and technical question, as to how do you define it. So Senator Frazier and I, Frazier's a very good friend of mine, and we've been on a lot of bills together over the years. He took the Farm Bureau's bill, which I think has some technical and drafting flaws in it. I took the other position and said, look, I'll lay out a bill that frames the issue, and let's just debate both bills, and let's try to find an answer and a solution. So that's basically what happened. Now, we didn't get into a heated debate. You know, I like to debate. But we, you know, the question is what do you own? Do you own the molecule? Do you own the right to go in and drill and produce? And how do you frame that so that we make sure that we have a clear ownership interest, that we have protections through the rule of capture, as well as we don't limit the ability of our groundwater districts to help collaborate and manage groundwater in the state. The people, quite frankly, agriculture is split on this a little bit. If you looked at who testified in favor of the bill I laid out, which is not a bill I plan to pass and never have, if you look at that bill, you saw there were many producer groups. These are commodity groups, especially those up on the high plains, that know we're running out of water and we've got to do a better job of collaborating to come up with technology and economics on how to manage it better using the groundwater districts. They were concerned with Frazier's bill because of the way the language read that might create more lawsuits, more taking claims, and those sorts of things. So the purpose of that hearing was to ferret that out. There were lawyers that were testifying, and we basically grilled on those lawyers about what this means. What is it? What is the nature of the interest? Following that, then we sat down in a room with lawyers and groundwater district people and everybody saying, okay, what's your take on the hearing? What did you hear? What did you take from that hearing as to how we can do this very important issue, frame it correctly? And we've come up and we're pretty close to a notion that a groundwater or that a landowner has a vested interest in groundwater below the surface, subject to the rule of capture, and also subject to the groundwater district's ability to what I call balance the competing interest for the water in the aquifer, since the water doesn't stay exactly under your ground. We've made a lot of progress out in West Texas with the producers on coming forward. We know that if we don't do something in West Texas, we won't have irrigated agriculture or a significant irrigated agricultural economy in the next 10 to 15 years because we're just really drawing down the aquifer. There are new technologies that if we can slow this down a little bit, these new technologies are like new varieties and new irrigation systems and scheduling systems that will help producers actually make more money, less cost, and save their water. But we got to catch up with that. Technology has to catch up with us on that. So that's basically what we're trying to do.
Well, Senator, I listen very carefully to what you're saying, and there's a theme throughout it, a couple of themes. And I think these themes are what, frankly, some of the ag, you know, you can talk about government hired hand water district people, and you can talk about lawyers all you want to. It comes across a little bit like they're the elites who know more. But I've spoken to some ag producers who are as damn sharp as any member of that Senate, yourself included. And I think I've got what's bothering them just listening to you right now. You said, if we don't do something, well, who the hell is we? You don't own the land. They own the land. And as conservatives, we believe that conservation is best done by the people who own the land and operate the land. I'm not setting aside the concept, Senator, that there may be some bad actors who try to pump the water out from under your land. And, of course, that's where you get in a tort. And maybe that's why we need some definition. I think you make a lot of good sense. But throughout everything you've said, I keep hearing a theme of government regulation, water districts, lawyers, people in Austin. And I think you said, you know, what's the rule? What some people are saying, it's always been a certain way. Well, I ask you this. Can a farmer not drill a well and pump water, or any existing well he has now pump water? Or does he have to go get permission from some governing body or whatever? I realize some districts regulate the pump, putting a hole in the well in the ground now. That's not true universally. If he can't pump his water now, who the hell owns it?
Well, you know, that's the question we're trying to resolve, Robert. I think the question is that if you have, if you want to protect your ground, if you're a rancher and you don't want to use your water today,
right?
But you have a neighbor that moves next door to you, like Ozarka, mm-hmm. and Ozarka says, I'm going to pump as much as I can because I'm going to sell bottled water. And unfortunately, what happens is that the water table goes down on the neighbor. The Supreme Court of the state of Texas has said in the Cipriano case not too long ago that there is no remedy for that. In all of the cases back, the only remedy that the rancher would have would be to drill an offset well and store the water in a pond. Well, that's not practical and not what the rancher wants to do. So,
And I think that's very much a real problem. I was very proud. There was an article that appeared in the London Daily Telegraph last week or so about this very issue, primarily visiting with farmers and ranchers in the high ground of Texas. And even though it was in England, and the writer got lots of things wrong, the geography and a lot of obvious things, one thing I was very proud of those people, when they were pushed, put that same question to them, they didn't have an easy answer, but they said the property right comes first, even if that means it is to our own detriment. And I think a lot of people feel that way, but they hear you guys saying, well, we want to come up with a government solution that will be better, but people are naturally weary of government solutions and government regulation.
Let me tell you what we heard at the hearing, and when we met afterwards.
I tell you what, Senator, can we go to our break right now? Hold that. That's a great place to start when we come back. We're visiting with Senator Robert Duncan, chairman of the State Affairs Committee, regarding the competing bills and the language involving groundwater rights in Texas. And when we left off, Senator Duncan was going to tell us some of the varying points of view heard in the pretty massive amount of testimony taken on this critical issue. Senator, I'll let you take it from there.
Thanks, Robert. Well, here's the consensus that we all reached from the hearing. Number one, that there is an ownership interest that the landowner has in the groundwater below the surface. But that interest is also subject to the rule of capture. And there was no disagreement that that's basically the mechanism for, one of the mechanisms for a landowner to be able to protect his water. But there was absolutely, and this goes to your earlier point about government and those sorts of things, there was no disagreement right. that you've got to have the groundwater districts there to balance the competing interest among all of the people in the pool of water that's there.
I would say about that, certainly not, because the people that go and testify are often these groups that are half quasi-governmental, or they're people who work as representatives of landowners, very indirectly, who work with the government all the time on things. I don't think, this is my own opinion, I don't think the trust and idea in all of this government regulation is as universal as it appears within the organs of government. I think people have gone along with the groundwater districts because, like everything else, bond issues and everything else, nobody really saw a big threat in it, and I think some are waking up to realize that maybe this isn't the right way. I'm not saying that's my point of view. I actually think as we manage oil and gas, there is some need for some of this to protect your own interest. And I think that's what you're saying the consensus is.
Exactly. I think that there, but the point that we want to make is we do not want mm-hmm. somebody from Austin telling us how we're going to do this. We want right. locally elected folks to do it. And that's the best, that was the consensus that everybody reached. Whether you were on one side or the other,
that's my fear, though, that groundwater districts were a compromise with the devil to begin with, because now it's already put in place a mechanism whereby a state move could essentially nationalize those under the state government. Maybe it would take a vote of the people. But in other words, it's once you already put the mechanism in place for government to have control, that it's much easier for government to continue down that slippery slope of a lot of control. And I hear people telling me that they feel that that's what's going on. And that may be absolutely 180 degrees away from the truth.
Here's the problem, though, Robert. And the Constitution, the Texas Constitution recognizes and actually authorizes the creation of these groundwater districts. And then we put in statute that locally elected groundwater districts are the preferred method to do this, you know, achieve this conservation. And, you know, the problem is that if you don't have these groundwater conservation districts and they're trying to at least make sure that people aren't wasting and taking more than what their right would be anyway, you're not going to be able to achieve any sort of protection for the landowner. Just in like the Cipriano case,
sure.
where I told you, Ozarka went next door, and this guy didn't have a well anymore. And so, you know, that's the purpose there. That's probably not, you know, perfect, but it's the best thing we have. And there was no disagreement that was the best way to do this, and nobody wanted to give up the locally elected groundwater district.
Agree with that.
As opposed to going to the state, or eventually the state comes in and takes it over, because here's the concern of the ranchers, and it's a legitimate concern. Texas is growing, and these municipalities are going to start getting hungry for water, and so they're going to be able to manipulate the political process to be able to basically control agriculture water. None of us want that, and so that's why I think we got to be very careful with this bill. But we're going to get a bill. I'm pretty confident that the Senate is going to pass a bill that, the ranchers that are my friend, you know, Joe Leathers is a good friend. I've worked for them mm-hmm. for years. Kathleen Hartnett White that was on here, the Farm Bureau guys. We don't always agree in the beginning about how to go about something, but because we debate it and we work it and make sure we get it right, eventually the product is something that really works, and that's what we're trying.
We've got about a minute before we're going to be out of time, and you've got to go meet with the lieutenant governor. So I want you to give us kind of a wrap up here on what you think that language is going to be and why farmers and ranchers should feel good about the direction it's heading?
I think that we're going to recognize the vested ownership interest in groundwater beneath the surface, subject to the rule of capture and subject to the reasonable balancing and rules and regulations of the groundwater districts. And that reasonable is very important. The groundwater districts can't get out of hand either, and landowners are going to have to be able to have, you know, fair remedies to be able to protect themselves when rules are unreasonable.
Well, makes sense to me. Any last comments on it?
Nope. I just appreciate you letting me have a chance to kind of give you an update on where we're going on that.
It is a critical issue, and we all understand that it's a critical issue, and it's not just a farmer and rancher issue. You alluded to the point of the growing. Texas is so growing and urban. Everybody's trying to stick a pipe and a straw out somewhere to get it, and somehow those interests are going to have to be balanced, and I would agree with you philosophically on that, certainly. And, Senator Duncan, we appreciate you joining us today, and thanks for all the time, and thanks for the good work.
Thank you, Robert.
You bet. Senator Robert Duncan, tell you what, I heard a theme through that. I made notes during the first 10 minutes when Senator was laying it out. A lot of talk about districts, you know, these quasi-governmental groups, lawyers, districts. The apparatus likes to work through its fellow apparatus. And I think people are hearing that, and I think they're comparing it to what we see in Washington, D.C. and elsewhere. And rightly, I think they're extraordinarily concerned about it. Frank, you're on the program. Go right ahead.
Yes, sir. You said something, quasi-government units. The High Plains Water District is talking about metering. Well, they're not talking about metering, but that's what it's going to require. Metering everybody's well and allowing only 15 inches of water per acre per year. And who's going to pay for the metering? And who's going to hire the people to monitor the metering?
Well, you're going to be taxed in the members of the water district. Look, this is the point I'm making. I'm not completely against. I actually intellectually agree with Senator Duncan on the fact that there are competing interests. I don't, unlike him, I'm not, he's one of these guys that's not the staunch conservative. He is a smarter government guy. And that already in that state plants far too much faith in government the way I feel about it, because once you've done this deal with the devil, which was done a long time ago in water districts, maybe for what is a good reason, but fundamentally it's left, you know, it's the camel's nose under the tent, and you've already created the environment or the agency and the apparatus would be the right word, the apparatus whereby little by little your property rights and your liberty can be taken. And here's the problem. Frank Duncan makes a good argument about weighing the interest. The problem is we know what happens. The individual citizen in the end always gets steamrollered by a much heavier weight on that scale balance of government. And that's what I think people are feeling that they're concerned about. You make a great point. How are we going to manage this without metering?
There's no way to do it without metering and without charging the property owner. And the property owner is a man that's going to conserve the water more than anybody else. It doesn't
Amen.
Need the state to look over it.
Well, I'm Frank, there's a big side of me that agrees with what you're saying. I do understand what Senator Duncan's saying in his position. I think it is because the long term, that number, by the way, 1-800-687-0790, the long term problem, this is where we, let this be a lesson. This is where we run into problems with people who don't have a strong, very strong and well-read philosophical background, and I mean education in it too. I don't mean formal education. I mean philosophy of government, conservatism, limited government. This is always how, little by little, good idea after good idea, it makes sense on paper that we end up bargaining our rights away, and I think people are in a position in the country right now where they're feeling that way about a lot of things, and so maybe they're rightly heightened, their sensitivity is heightened at this moment to it, and in the groundwater issue. We go to the phones to speak with Jeffrey in Hockley County, Texas. Jeffrey, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Robert, and thank you for addressing this issue. The 16 counties in the High Plains Water Conservation District are at an Alamo moment, Robert. The draft rules that are being considered right now through the district, the public comment session our section oral comments ends April 1st. May the 1st, our water district will vote on these rules and regulations. It's 48 pages that will rescind all other rules and regulations prior to May 31st, 2011. And, Robert, in this, as I've educated myself, what they're looking at is the 50-50 plan. And to do that, they're looking at desired future condition. That is a DFC. And there are, these are draconian.
Yeah, government is deciding. That's another problem I have with this. Now, maybe the members have voted that they want this 50-50. In other words, have 50% left in 50 years, I think was what that was. But
by 2060.
Yeah, and I'm just not sanguine with the whole thing. It makes me as nervous as it makes property owners because, once again, and I'll repeat it and then I'll let you continue, what happens in the end to good ideas we have seen for 200-plus years, what happens in the end to good ideas where we compromise on this stuff for very legitimate reasons, and I give Senator Duncan that, very legitimate, on paper it looks great reasons, the government steamrollers the people and the people end up with fewer property rights. It's just the history of our nation. However, now, I want to put one aside in before you get back, Jeffrey, and talk about that, the water district, and then throwing away all these decades of tradition and all the rules that people are used to, and that is this. Texas developed the way to manage this for oil and gas, and we developed the model that the entire world uses, and it's worked very well for oil and gas. But here's the problem on the political side. That is this. Oil and gas leases and oil and gas owners tend to be a very powerful interest with a lot of money. Farms and agriculture and ranches are not. They are spread out amongst a lot more people, none of whom are big, single, powerful corporate interests, despite all the crap you always hear about corporate farming by people who don't even know what the hell they're talking about. And I don't think that farmers and ranchers and landowners out here in their minuscule numbers will ever be able to form the lobbying organizations that the oil and gas people do to continue to protect their interest 20 years down the road when we're full of people in cities who don't want to pay high water bills and they don't give a damn about the farmers and ranchers. That's just a point I wanted to make there, Jeffrey. Go right ahead and tell us a little more about what could happen with this water district vote. And which water district are you talking about, by the way? There are a lot of districts in our listening audience.
That's correct. But your comments were very succinctly stated, Robert. We're talking about the 16-county High Plains Water Conservation District.
Okay, so this is the kind of thing that other districts will look at, too, in the future. This district, though, is right on it, having the public comment periods now approaching the change. That's what you're telling us.
That's correct. They are taking a position of neutrality. However, they are being handed mandates through the Texas Water Commission Planning Board, and they will become the regulatory police force that will actually seize not ownership but control. And you know the devil's in the details, Robert.
That's right.
It doesn't matter who owns the water.
It matters who controls it.
Who controls it? So as you know, it was Mark Twain said, "Whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting." And this is the Alamo moment right here. The largest seizure of private property rights in the history of the state of Texas is taking place now.
Let's be real specific, Jeffrey. You've spent a lot of time working on this. What would you want members of the High Plains Underground Water District to do? What position do you want them to take vis-a-vis what's being considered?
There are some simple steps, very professional, not out of anger, not out of emotion, but to call your water representative, James Powell is in Lubbock, Linn County, and Crosby, and to call the water district and request in writing and attend the meetings. They've been posted, and I'll be able to give them to your caller here in a minute of the other public meetings that are still to take place, and request the water district to postpone the voting, either the ratifying of these new rules and regulations, until these concerns can be taken care of.
In other words, it's pretty damn stupid to throw out the entire history of the water district right now and go and make all these changes and empower them with all this when the legislature hasn't even acted yet on what could be a fundamental change or clarification for the better in water law in Texas.
That's exactly right. And due to the seemingly capitulation of our of the water district. They will. They feel their hands are tied, and if this is voted, if the five board member votes to adopt these rules, well, the people who use 80% of the water on the Plains of District make up less than 2% of the population. Those are the farmers and ranchers.
And they don't have that's right. And they don't have the votes to. This is where you get upside down, and that's what I was talking about with oil and gas. If you're upside down in political votes, then you better have money in lobbying organizations. And I don't think that even with some good commodity prices temporarily, that we're going to get ourselves in the position of the oil and gas people, those who are involved in agriculture, that is. Jeffrey, thanks very much.
Meet up with other Pratt on Texas listeners on Facebook. Username Pratt on Texas.